We have started a culture, said the marketing girl.
Oh, yes, said Ford.
Yes. One of our film producers is already making a fascinating documentary about the indigenous cavemen of the area.
They're not cavemen.
They look like cavemen.
Do they live in caves?
Well,
they live in huts.
Perhaps they're having their caves redecorated,
called out a wag from the crowd.
Ford rounded on him angrily. Very funny, he said, but have you noticed that they're dying out?
On their journey back, Ford and Arthur had come across two derelict villages and the bodies of many natives in the woods where they had crept away to die. Those that still lived seemed stricken and listless, as if they were suffering from some disease of the spirit rather than the body. They moved sluggishly and with an infinite sadness. Their future had been taken away from them.
Dying out, repeated Ford. Do you know what that means?
We shouldn't sell them any life insurance,
called out the wag again.
Ford ignored him and appealed to the whole crowd. Can you try and understand, he said, that it's just since we've arrived here that they've started dying out? In fact, that comes over terribly well in this film, said the marketing girl, and just gives it that poignant twist which is the hallmark of the really great documentary. The producer's very committed.
He should be, muttered Ford.
I gather, said the girl, turning to address the captain, who was beginning to nod off, that he wants to make one about you next, Captain.
Oh, really?
He said, coming to with a start.
That's awfully nice.
He's got a very strong angle on it, you know. The burden of responsibility, the loneliness of command.
The captain hummed and hawed about this for a moment.
Well, I wouldn't overstress that angle, you know, he said finally. One's never alone with a rubber duck.
He held the duck aloft, and it got an appreciative round from the crowd. All this while, the management consultant had been sitting in stony silence, his fingertips pressed to his temples to indicate that he was waiting and would wait all day if it was necessary. At this point, he decided he would not wait all day after all. He would merely pretend that the last half hour hadn't happened. He rose to his feet.
If, he said tersely, we could for a moment move on to the subject of fiscal policy. Fiscal policy, whooped Ford Prefect. Fiscal policy!
The management consultant gave him a look that only a lungfish could have copied.
Fiscal policy, he repeated. That is what I said. How can you have money, demanded Ford, if none of you actually produces anything? It doesn't grow on trees, you know. If you would allow me to continue.
Ford nodded dejectedly.
Thank you. Since we decided a few weeks ago to adopt the leaf as legal tender, we have, of course, all become immensely rich.
Ford stared in disbelief at the crowd, who were murmuring appreciatively at this and greedily fingering the wads of leaves with which their tracksuits were stuffed.
But we have also, continued the management consultant, run into a small inflation problem on account of the high level of leaf availability, which means that, I gather, the current going rate has something like 3 deciduous forests buying 1 ship's peanut.
Murmurs of alarm came from the crowd. The management consultant waved them down.
So, in order to obviate this problem, he continued, and effectively revalue the leaf, we are about to embark on a massive defoliation campaign and, burn down all the forests. I think you'll all agree that's a sensible move under the circumstances.
The crowd seemed a little uncertain about this for a second or two, until someone pointed out how much this would increase the value of the leaves in their pockets, whereupon they let out whoops of delight and gave the management consultant a standing ovation. The accountants amongst them looked forward to a profitable autumn.
You're all mad, explained Ford Prefect. You're absolutely balmy, he suggested. You're a bunch of raving nutters, he opined.
The tide of opinion was beginning to turn against him. What had started out as excellent entertainment had now, in the crowd's view, deteriorated into mere abuse, and since this abuse was in the main directed at them, they wearied of it. Sensing this shift in the wind, the marketing girl turned on him.
Is it perhaps in order, she demanded, to inquire what you've been doing all these months then? You and that other interloper have been missing since the day we arrived.
We've been on a journey, said Ford. We went to try and find out something about this planet.
Oh, said the girl archly. Doesn't sound very productive to me.
No? Well, have I got news for you, my love.
We have discovered this planet's future.
Ford waited for this statement to have its effect. It didn't have any. They didn't know what he was talking about. He continued.
It doesn't matter a pair of fetid dingoes' kidneys what you all choose to do from now on. Burn down the forests, anything. It won't make a scrap of difference. Your future history has already happened. 2 million years you've got, and that's it. At the end of that time, your race will be dead. Gone, and good riddance to you. Remember that. 2 million years.
The crowd muttered to itself in annoyance. People as rich as they had suddenly become shouldn't be obliged to listen to this sort of gibberish. Perhaps they could tip the fellow a leaf or two and he would go away. They didn't need to bother. Ford was already stalking out of the clearing, pausing only to shake his head at number two, who was already firing his killer zap into some neighbouring trees. He turned back once.
2 million years, he said, and laughed.
Well, said the captain with a soothing smile, still time for a few more baths. Could someone pass me the sponge? I just dropped it over the side.